Hello, Kara Welke, occupational therapist, creator of the Next Level Occupational Therapy Platform. We are a community of OT professionals on a mission to help as many OTs and OTAs start up their business as possible, as well Yay. As help those in current practice level up. There is very limited information out there to support us as OT professionals to start their own practice, and that is where the Next Level OT platform is going to step in and fill the void. So please check out our Facebook group, the Next Level Occupational Therapy, where we'd love to have you join and get additional information. Throughout the next several shows, I will be interviewing amazing OTs and OTAs that have started their own business so that you can learn from those that have already been through the process and have succeeded. I am so excited for all that we will learn from our current OT entrepreneurs. Now on to today's show. It is my pleasure to welcome Laura Park Figueroa. Laura is an occupational therapist who started her own private practice called Outdoor Kids Occupational Therapy 4 years ago. She also ran her own side business as a private practice for many years prior. Laura has a fantastic podcast called Mind Your OT Business, which you definitely have to check out. She started it in March of 2019. Laura is hosting a therapy in the Great Outdoors training retreat this November, in which she will be sharing her framework for nature-based therapy, which is called Contigo, Connection and Transformation in the Great Outdoors Approach. If you want to get into the nature-based occupational therapy route, I definitely recommend you check this out. I will post links in the comment section. I initially met Laura through a Facebook group and had the pleasure of meeting her in person at last year's AOTA conference. I am so excited for you all to hear her journey to becoming an amazing OT entrepreneur. So, on to the show. Laura, can you start with about your current business?
So, you want to hear about my current business or how I got started? Well,
let's hear about your current business first. People know about outdoor.
Yeah. So my current business is Outdoor Kids OT, and I have four occupational therapists that work for me and run the groups. We specialize in nature-based small group OT. So, like you mentioned, the Contigo approach that we developed really focuses on connection and transformation in the great outdoors. And that connection word refers to the idea that we always have other kids in the treatment session with us. It's a small group model. The transformation refers to the fact that we're using evidence-based practice out in the woods with the kids to intervene in the areas that they need support in to work towards their goals. And then great outdoors is obviously like nature helps us in the process. So that approach, all of the therapists have been really influential in helping me think through really making that approach the best it can be. And we have six groups that we do after school. The groups are about some of them are 2 hours long if they're on Saturdays, because you don't get as many Saturday sessions in during the school year. And the after school groups are about an hour and 45 minutes. So they're really long, a lot of time to spend with the kids, which is awesome. And yeah, it's just kind of grown from me starting out with like two groups to like now we're pretty established in the community and people know of us. And my mind is going a million different directions with like all the things we did to get here. But that's kind of the gist of the current practice right now. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask, are you cash based or do you do insurance, or how does the financial aspect work?
It's all cash based. I live in the Bay Area of California. I could not pay my therapist what I would get reimbursed for insurance, because I don't know, in case anyone's listening, I don't really want to say what they're paid, but but I feel like the bottom line is I could really only afford to pay a new graduate if I was going to take insurance. And like at that level of pay, essentially, because out here, like therapists make a lot of money. I mean, they have to be paid a high hourly rate, and payroll is like over 50% of my business budget, because therapists are just expensive to employ. And our model also is, because we meet for a long time, even though it's a group service, so there's a lot of kids paying in, I guess, to the pot that I pay the therapist out of, it takes money to run a business. You know, it takes money to do good marketing and have systems set up and have the supports that you need to run the business well. And so I decided very early on that I was not going to do insurance. I have billed insurance in the past when I was doing home-based services when I lived in Miami and early when I lived here. And it just such a headache. And I really did not want to go that route again. And I think it's really hard to go back to go fully to cash pay once you've gone down the insurance route. So yeah, it wasn't something I was interested in doing with this practice. We do give people super bills if they want them to submit to their out-of-network, to submit to their insurance with us as an out-of-network provider. But I will say, I don't think people get reimbursed a lot because it's a group service and we have to use the group code. And so unfortunately, I think a lot of us experience this, that insurance codes, the billing codes don't exactly reimburse for things that are best practice, like a group service to work on social skills with kids. Imagine that, you know, that you might need a group to work on social skills, but the insurance won't reimburse for it. So because of all of that, cash-based was the best route for us. We do give scholarships to families, and we just found a foundation locally that will give funding to businesses for people to attend therapeutic support services. So we're going through that process now and submitting applications for all of our kids that we have on scholarship. But I'd say in the past we usually had about 15% of our kids were on very significant scholarships. So we do give away services to kids that are in need, but I really wish we could do that more. But the reality of a cash pay model is you have to pay your therapist. You have to make enough money to pay your therapist. And I'm really big on that as OTs. I think we give away too much. Like we give away too much of our service to clients before they even pay sometimes in a consult call or something. And also we over deliver and underpay ourselves. And I think that needs to stop for us to feel like we are really valued professionals in the healthcare marketplace, and also with our clients, for them to value us. Like we have to value ourselves first. So, right. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, and it seems, I mean, do you think that therapy as a whole is going towards that cash-based model? I see tons of therapists starting cash-based practices. What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I personally think that, honestly, I have to, like, I have to check my emotions when I see people on some of the Facebook forums asking about billing codes and talking about their headaches with billing, because I just want to say, like, that is not the way to financial success. Like I don't know. And I actually would like to bring someone on my podcast to ask them this. I don't understand how businesses that are taking insurance are actually making money. Like, right. Like I really truly don't know how the numbers work out, because when I have seen the numbers, like someone posted something in a Facebook forum about Medicaid, asking, I think they were lobbying for Medicaid rates to be increased in their state, right? So they were trying to get a pulse on, like, what state do you work in and what are your Medicaid rates? I'm like, oh, I wonder what our Medicaid rates are. I don't know what they are because we don't take Medicaid, but right. $11 a unit in the state of California. $11 a unit.
Yeah, that's
$44. Who can work? We have doctorate degrees, people. I mean, like really? Are we working for $44 an hour? I'm sorry. It was infuriating me. So I posted, like, I can't believe this. I couldn't even pay my therapist on this. Like, there's even my newest graduate therapist, with the taxes that I pay, I would lose money with them seeing clients with that rate. So I don't know how it leaves it to like nonprofits, because nonprofits can get grants and things to offset the cost of our services. But it's embarrassing to me that our government values our services at $44 an hour. Like, that's what they think we should be paid for working with some of the most vulnerable kids in our society. It's like, anyway, I'm on a soapbox that I know everyone agrees with, so I'll just stop now.
No, but that's awesome. Yeah. And I'm so glad it works so well in where you practice. Now, do you offer, some people have been asking, do they offer just single visits or do you offer packages for your kids?
Well, the way that we're set up, so when I first started out, I did 10 week sessions. So I had people sign up for 10 weeks and they pay up front or they pay monthly over the course of those two and a half months. And we quickly discovered that most people stayed for the whole year. So the third year we were in business, we decided to be a school year service essentially. And we basically have a lot of documentation in the paperwork when people sign up to say, like, we will not keep your child on therapy if it is not necessary. Obviously that's unethical and we're not going to do that. But most of the kids that we see have longer term issues that really do take, I mean, it's a total, if you stay for the whole school year with breaks and stuff, it's a total of around 30 visits for the whole year. And at that point, when we made it a school year program, we invested in a registration platform, like what a camp would use, for them to be able to pay monthly over the course of the year. So the nice thing is it feels affordable still, even though it kind of gets them into, it's a system in our business that kind of gets our clients in the door and keeps them paying consistently for the entire school year, because it's set up in a really good system. And then we have peer playmates in the groups too. I forgot to say that. Like, we have kids that get OT, but we also have slots for kids that just need nature play and are there to participate with their peers, that are usually typically developing kids, or they're kids that have been in our services for a while and have transitioned into this peer playmate role. And those kids pay a really significantly reduced fee. And so if we feel like a kid mid-year is ready to exit OT, then we just transition them into that role. And usually families are happy because it's way less money, but also it's an easy way for them to stay in the group and kind of slowly wean off of OT services.
Right.
So,
yeah. Plus they go to that next level and are like, now I'm the kid that people want to play with. I mean, that's neat.
Right.
That's
right.
Awesome.
I mean, part of the model is that the whole reason we call it Contigo Kids, like we don't put the logo Outdoor Kids OT on a lot of stuff, because we don't really want the kids to know who's getting therapy and who isn't.
Right. Yep.
So we've really tried hard to keep it where the kids feel like they're just playing. So they don't know who's getting OT and who's the peer playmate. They just are all together outdoors. But there is some, we do have to set expectations for families, because I think that sometimes parents, think their kid is going to pick up bad behavior or something from another kid. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to work really hard, to advocate for inclusion and talk with kids about how to play specifically with kids with autism, because kids don't understand autism unless we really talk to them about it. But for parents too, I think parents sometimes have more biases than kids do. And I think, I'm adding some stuff to our welcome packet this year about like respecting differences and understanding that kids may have different behaviors and how to talk to your kid about it. And, so.
That's awesome. Awesome. Well, for those that are just at the starting point of thinking about starting their business, I was wondering if you could jump way back in time and tell us about when you first started thinking about starting your own business, even if that was when you first started your old side job when you were doing your home visit.
Yeah.
So like what got you going from the traditional OT stuff to wanting to do something on your own?
Yeah. Well, I think the way a lot of people, I started the same way a lot of people start, which is I was working for a children's hospital, and there was a kid that was coming in for outpatient rehab that they couldn't, I don't remember, I guess it was like 15 years ago, but I don't remember all the details, but it was something like their insurance changed or they weren't going to be able to drive to the facility anymore. And they were looking, they mentioned that they were looking for someone to come to the house. And so a PT friend and I checked in with our supervisor and she was like, that's fine if you guys do that, if she's exited from the hospital, or the out, it was outpatient rehab at the hospital. And so we kind of just started that way, both my friend who's a physical therapist and I, and we slowly just kind of built a clientele that way. But I would say back then, I really did not, I mean, first of all, the internet was not what it was today, 15 years ago. So the lack of access to resources, I think, was a big piece for me. But I didn't have that entrepreneurial mindset back then. I wasn't intending to like grow the business. I wasn't intending to leave my job at the hospital. It more was just sort of like nice little extra money on the side, right? And I think probably the reason that I didn't have that drive to grow the business, it was multiple things. I mean, one, I had very young kids at the time. So that was like, kind of like, I just wanted to work and like be with them. Right. But also I think, I enjoyed my work, but it wasn't something that I really ever envisioned wanting to, I didn't feel like such passion about it that I wanted to grow it into some big business where I had people working for me and going to different homes and managing clients. And some of it was just a growth process for me too, like my age maybe. Like I think as I matured and as I became a better therapist over the years, I started to see that what I really like doing is working with it, like in a coaching model, even with families. I like talking to the parents almost more than I liked the direct work with kids, which is, you know, it's like not okay to say as an OT, but I'm trying to like really at this phase of my life. I mean, they joke that when you turn 40, you like don't give up anymore. So I kind of think I'm in that phase of life where I'm like, I just want to be able to like be who I am and not apologize for it. And that's kind of what I'm realizing about myself now is I'm really good at working with adults. Like it doesn't really like appeal to me to work with adults as an OT, no offense to you guys, but like in a coaching sense, like I love doing business coaching and I love working with parents in the families that we work with. And I love working with my employees and my business manager. So I think I'm kind of in a sweet spot now where I've kind of found what I really like. And it was just a process of coming to understand that was who I am as a person and kind of growing into that as I got older, I guess. It's a weird answer. I didn't expect to say that, but it just kind of came out that way. But yeah.
So is there any part of you that wishes you would have started your, like the Outdoor Kids OT sooner? Rather than only 4 years ago?
Maybe, but I also kind of feel like it was very like the right thing at the right time to me. I mean, I think, I wish maybe I'd started sooner, but I think I started at just the right time. I do. I feel like I was ready. I felt really equipped. I felt like I had the resources I need. I mean, don't get me wrong. I was totally unsure and not confident. And, you know, I'm not trying to sound like I had everything together, but I do feel like the process has been invigorating and exciting for me instead of being, overwhelming and stressful. It's been that too, but it's more, I'm super excited to be running my own business and growing it. And I just love what we do too. I'd say there's probably only been one moment. There was one moment that I remember over a winter break at one point when we needed to fill a group and sorry, I'm getting a phone call. I'll decline that. And it was over winter break and I was just busting my butt. And I was like, you know what, if I still worked in schools, I could just like sit here and do nothing right now, you know? I would be relaxing instead of like scrambling to like get clients and emailing people and talking to my therapist and, you know, but that was like once. I mean, generally it's just been pretty fun and exciting for me. I'm still young in it too. I mean, 4 years in isn't really that far, but, That's the thing I love about being an entrepreneur, is that you can always have something new and exciting to do. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs are entrepreneurs because of that. We're right. curious people, you know, we want there always to be the next challenge or the next level, yep. like that plug that we want to get to, right? There's right. always going to be another level. It's not like your business is ever going to top out at like, you're just done. It can, if you want it to. I'm kind of at that place with Outdoor Kids OT. I feel like the next level for Outdoor Kids OT might be going to like a multi-state model where mm-hmm. we have other locations in different states. But I'm at a place where I'm like taking that step when it comes to me. I'm not on some big explosive growth phase right now where I'm trying to do that. I really want to get more a balanced kind of, I think what my ideal work situation right now would be is to keep Outdoor Kids OT running like a smooth running machine like it is, and maybe grow it a little. I mean, I don't want it not to grow, but then also do business coaching, because I just love business so much. I love talking right. with business owners. I laugh because I've never been high, but I feel high, what I think would be high, after I get off the phone with business owners. I just love it. I love talking to them about their business. I love helping them see like what the next step they need to do is yep. without total overwhelm of like feeling all the stress of a business owner. So like, I just like helping people get clarity and like helping them take that next step forward. And it just feeds me in a way that I don't feel like, maybe my work as an OT did at one point, maybe I'm exaggerating, but I do just feel like I'm in my element when I'm working with business owners. That's my favorite, you know? Yep. So yeah, that's kind of where, I mean, that's a whole nother business. I started the podcast and I did started business coaching. I was like, wait, now I'm running two businesses. What did I just do? You know, but it's so fun. I don't care. It's so fun. So,
well, and that's what, you know, out there, we need other OTs helping each other, growing their business yeah. and being the coach. So
absolutely.
Awesome. So thinking back again, what are the 5 tips that you would have for someone that is just at the starting point? They just maybe have an idea, or I know a lot of people, like we're in the same group, they have like 10 ideas, but they don't yeah. know where to go there.
Right.
So
right,
what are
right.
5 big tips you would have for someone just wanting to start out a private practice?
Yeah, I mean, along that line, you segued perfectly into number one. That's so great, Kara. I would say the first thing you have to do is make sure that you have a financially viable idea, because I see a lot of OTs like, I want to do, I don't want to say anything that will offend anyone, so I'm not going to say anything. I'll just zip my lip here. There's a lot of people who have these ideas, but there's no evidence that they've tested the idea, that they've actually looked at the community around them, or if you're doing some sort of online thing where you might be doing telehealth, you still need to know that there is a need for your service. What problem are you solving for people? If you're not solving a problem, you don't have a business. And right. so you need to think about like, is it actually a viable business that you have in your mind? Is this actually something that people need, and is there actually a problem that you're solving? Okay, so that's number one, making sure it's viable financially. And along those lines, number two is decide who that client is that you are serving, and please speak their language. Please do not talk about yourself on your website. Do not say how many years of experience you have and how great you are and how you just really want to help and blah, blah, blah. No one cares about you. They care about themselves. And so talk about your business in the way that it is going to serve people. Like, how yes. are you going to help the person that you are serving? What is the problem? How do you know how to help? And then give them that solution. And also, I would say, as an aside, Donald Miller's book, Building a Story Brand, best marketing book I've ever read by far. I mean, it's awesome. It'll walk you through how to like line up your verbiage on your website so that it actually speaks to customers. And one of the things he says is that you need to help them feel the pain that they will feel, help your customer feel a little bit of pain. Like, there has to be a risk at not buying your service.
Right.
It has to be like, if you don't act now, this might happen. Your child might continue to have these problems, and the problems could even get worse if you don't get help now. Now, that's kind of, you know, it's controversial as an OT to say that, but there's ways you can say that and communicate
right.
to families. Because you really, if you're coming from a place of really wanting to help people, I think lining up your copy, the right copy is just the word for the writing on your website. Lining up the copy on your website in a way that will really speak to customers and help them understand what you have to offer and why they need it, is only going to serve them. It's really in the intention to serve families. It's not about you getting rich. So really thinking about it with the intention to serve and help. So number two, know your ideal client and speak their language. Number three, I wrote down a couple of things. So you have to get your business set up. A lot of times we get clients, at least I did. I had clients before I had my business set up. You know, it was like, oh, someone paid me. I guess I better figure out if I'm a sole proprietor, an LLC or whatever, you know? Like,
yep.
Who do I write the check to? Just Laura Figueroa is fine, you know? I don't have a business name yet. That was years ago. But basically, if you want to do it the right way, I think Nolo Press is the organization that I recommend everyone check out online. It's, I can't remember what Nolo stands for, but basically it's N-O-L-O. Nolo Press. They are based here in Berkeley, in my hometown. And they are a legal organization that writes books for people to help them do legal stuff on their own. And so those books, and I'm not, if anyone's heard my podcast, they know that I am not big on paying lawyers unless you really need to, but, and you should when you need to, but these books will help you. You can get a book for, you know, how to set up an LLC, how to start a business as a sole proprietor. I mean, they have so many books available. And I use their book, How to Set Up Your Professional Corporation in the State of California, whatever it was called, I can't remember, to do most of the incorporation myself. And then I paid a lawyer for a tiny little piece that I had a question on. And so you can save a lot of money doing that. And I think using those books will help you like do the checklist and make sure that you've done everything you need to do legally for your business. From, you know, getting a bank account set up to keep your finances separate, to filing paperwork with the Secretary of State, to paying your taxes, to whatever all that stuff is, those books are phenomenal. So if you can get your business set up, once you know your idea is viable and you know who your ideal client is, then set up your business. I wouldn't recommend it the other way around, because I think as you do the research to figure out if your business is viable, you might have other ideas. And so that will help you if you do it in that sequence, like decide if it's viable first, find your ideal client, and then set up the actual business piece. Once you have the business set up, number four would be to get your systems down. So how are people going to access your services or your product or your course or whatever you have online? You need to have a really clear process that a customer goes through in order to get your thing that you're selling. Okay. So one thing that helps me, sorry, the street sweeper is going by out front. I'm going to pause for a minute.
Okay.
I came to the backyard because I thought it would be quiet, but I forgot it was street sweeping day. So with systems, I think what is really helpful is get a blank sheet of paper and write down all the steps. And I draw it like a flow chart. Like I put, you know, the first step is at the top, like parent calls to inquire about services. And then I draw a little arrow. And the next thing is Laura returns phone call for 15-minute consult or whatever. And then the next thing is parent goes online to fill out intake paperwork, whatever. These aren't ours. I'm just making up.
But, right.
But it helps me, at least. It was really that process. I still remember the day I wrote down all these steps and I was like, oh my gosh, there's so much inefficiency here. Like, why am I spending so much time on the phone with people when I could give them information on the website if they just click here for initial consult information or whatever. Like it showed all the inefficiencies in our early systems of the business and helped me rewrite all the systems to where it would be really efficient and really clear for families and not be such a time suck on my time. My problem is I really love talking to people. I love talking to families. And so I would say it was a 15-minute, I do this with business consults too. It's a 15-minute business consult, right? For free. But really it ends up being 20, 25 because I just love talking to people. So that getting those systems in place is really critical. And the prime way I would say to do that is to write out what actually happens and then rewrite it as to what an ideal situation would be and like eliminate the inefficiencies there. Your customers need a really clear way that they walk through. A confused customer is not they don't want to buy from you, and it makes them uncertain and unsure. And you want a really clear system in place for how they're going to access your services, even before you get started, ideally. And then number five is market. You got to market your services. And there's a million different ways you can do that. But I think the way that most people don't want to do is actually talk to people and get in front of people. And, you know, you have to be confident in what you're offering, and you have to have that little, like, you know, what's the problem you solve, and tell people what the problem you solve is in a 2-minute elevator speech. That's the business term, you know, or whatever, but like really, really knowing what value you offer and being confident about it, and what you have to offer. I think that with marketing too, when you're really early on and you maybe don't have enough clients, it's really, really important to get some sort of system set up on your website where you're capturing people, because people come to your website, but like, I don't know, 2% of them are ready to like sign up for the services right then. But they might be like, I'm a little worried about my kid for my practice. I'm a little worried about my kid. I don't know. Like maybe I need OT. Maybe we don't. But if you have something on your website that says, you know, join our email list to learn ours right now. It's called a lead magnet. The lead magnet we have to get people to want to join the email list is that we have a little PDF of 5 ways to use nature to boost your child's attention, because everybody's concerned about their kids' attention nowadays. Right. And so they join that email list. And the point of the email list is to serve. The point of your email list is not to sell. It is to serve people. So you establish, like, you know, I think right now I have 7 or 8 automatic emails that go out monthly. Not one of them is selling anything. It is just like free OT information for families. Like basically like the top questions we always get asked as OTs, like, how do I calm down my kid when they're super energetic? Or how do I get my kid to listen even when they don't want to, you know? So we take those questions and we make a little list of 3 different things that parents can do. And that information is free to them. And I have looked at the open rates for my emails in MailChimp. Don't use MailChimp. MailChimp's horrible. If you're listening to this, people, don't use MailChimp. Thank me later that I told you not to. I have too many email lists there to go off. But I wish I had not started with them. But anyway, I've gone in there and I've looked at the open rates, and those emails get opened like at a rate way higher than industry levels, like to family. It'll be like our open rates for our emails are like, I think 40% to 50%. And then it'll be like industry standard for health and wellness is like 3% or something like that. So if you're giving people valuable information, it boosts you in their mind as a valid and a helpful resource in your community. And so then they'll be, I was just on a business call this morning talking to someone about this. Then they'll, you know, that parent that gets our emails will be out at a party somewhere, and someone's going to say something about, oh my gosh, their kid is so hyperactive and maybe they need to get an assessment of some sort. And they'll be like, oh, there's this really great practice. Like, I haven't used their services, but they send these helpful emails that I've just really benefited from because they give really helpful information. And it keeps your business kind of top of mind with people who may not even be your clients. Like, so I think that's a really important thing when you get started marketing. It's like, yes, get in front of people and talk to them, but also make sure that you have some systems set up to catch people who are coming to your website who might be interested, and a way to serve those people who may never be your clients. Like, that's marketing in a way that really helps people, which really resonates with us as OTs, because we just want to help people, you know? So that's exactly the way to motivate us as OTs. So, yeah, that's it.
Well, those are fabulous tips. And the whole serving people, I just feel a lot of people miss that step. And that's like the key step. You have to be willing to serve people and not going out there and asking for things for yourself all the time. So,
yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, you've shared a wealth of information. I'm so excited about your upcoming retreat. I wish I served kids so I could come. And I don't know if outdoor therapy would go very well here in North Dakota when it's like snow on the ground all the time.
You know what's crazy is if you do research, I mean, it's a little iffy if any of the data is actually true, but supposedly the first forest school in the United States was in Madison, Wisconsin, where it's snowy and freezing cold for like six months out of the year. And I just love that. I love that the forest school model, like, started, that it wasn't like, oh, it started in like LA where it's like 70 degrees and sunny all year long. You know? I mean, we have a long rainy season here. We got a lot of rain last year. The therapists were trying to smile. I think they were a little tired of the rain. We really focus on like embracing all kinds of weather, right, in our practice and communicating that to families, to communicate to their kids. But I think it was challenging last year because there was so much rain. But
fabulous. But I know that they do outdoor programs a lot. So, and it could be down here. I'm just not a fan of the cold weather, so I wouldn't want to be outside.
Yeah. It is very cold in winter there. That is true. If you read some of the forest schools, there's really great books on forest schools about some that are in New England, like in Connecticut, New Hampshire. I mean, there are some in Maine, Vermont. I mean, somewhere there's very cold winters and they're outdoors. It really teaches kids resilience and grit. I mean, it's a pretty cool model. And a lot of the places where forest schools originally started, like Denmark, Finland, those places are, you know, freezing cold in winter. So it can be done. It can be done.
Right. I send my kids all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you so much for everyone. Oh, listening.
You're so welcome.
Thank you for listening to the Next Level Occupational Therapy podcast. Be sure you check out the Next Level Occupational Therapy Facebook page to keep up to date on all the new happenings.